Welcome, digital communication students. Sorry I couldn't be with you this week, but I wanted to add some additional content to our online blog content. So this week we're talking about microblogging and content creation. And we've talked a lot about the different platforms and we've read different articles about how to use blogging and photos and video and the multiple platforms. We just discussed the power of the platforms in that lecture and discussed different types of content and how to reach our audiences with that content. I want to talk to you today a little bit about podcasting and more innovative and ways of creating content that you may not have thought of because they're not as obvious to you right now. I'm sure many of you listen to podcasts, you download them regularly. So I want to talk a bit about the technical side of setting one up and broadcasting yourself, and then the strategic side of how organizations can use them. So I'm actually sitting in a colleague of mine's podcast studio at the UN London Lab at the University of Western Ontario Research Park. This space is awesome. Anyone can join, so you guys should check it out. I'm here with Stuart Clark. Stuart Clark is a tech guru in our city. He runs two podcasts regularly, the Canada Tech Podcast and Twilt. Twilt is really interesting because it's This Week in London Twitter. And we talked a lot about how you can actually use Twitter strategically to analyze what's being talked about. And that's exactly what Twilt does. They look at what's going on in the Twitterverse and how that's influencing our culture and politics. So I want to welcome Stu.
Thank you.
And I tell you guys to check it out at twilt.ca or techpodcast.ca.
That's right.
Or about me. Stuart Clark.
About me slash, I think, Stuart Clark. Yes. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, they'll figure it out soon enough. I'm probably infamous for maybe one or two of them already.
Yes, exactly. If you're on Twitter and you're in technology, you probably know Stuart Clark. So Stuart's going to take a look at, well, basically teach us about the technical side of podcasting. I'll be honest, this is my disclaimer. I use podcasts from a content creation point of view, which for me means, as an organization, finding platforms to communicate. So I don't generally host. I don't have a podcast. None of my clients have podcasts. I find ways to be a guest on other people's podcasts.
Exactly.
So we'll get to that, but maybe talk a little bit about the process of creating a podcast.
Well, creating a podcast is actually fairly simple, and I should apologize to the class in advance. I'm just getting over a cold, so I don't normally have such a deep radio voice. But yeah, in terms of creation, you can basically do it with just a USB headset, a laptop, a computer, and an internet connection. That's really the gist of it is. It's essentially creating your own audio file, uploading it to your web server and providing a link and sharing it with your potential friends and your audience.
So I'm assuming that there needs to be some kind of software to do this?
Couple of different things. For Mac users, it's simple enough. Apple has GarageBand, which is a audio editing software, but it's also used for audio recording. There's also for Windows and Mac, there's another piece of software called Audacity, and that's actually free as well. And again, you can use it to record and to edit. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, you need a microphone, obviously. At the beginning, if you're just doing your own podcast, the microphone that comes with your standard headset is good enough. I know people do podcasts on their iPhone, little microphones that come with their earbuds.
Yeah.
Obviously, you want to try and have a reasonably quiet place where to record it. Obviously, here, we've got a very kind of soundproof environment, but people do it in their own homes and stuff like that. Unless your podcast, you're trying to set a certain atmosphere, obviously lack of background noise is always helpful. No crying dogs or barking dogs and crying babies.
Yep.
Or barking babies and crying dogs.
Either.
Either one. So that's the main thing. You first have to create the content, and then it's a matter of uploading it somewhere. Now, in the deep, dark past, and this is something that I had to learn, a lot of people think that, podcast, I record a podcast, and then I upload it to Apple, and Apple puts it on their podcast thing, and everyone's happy. No. That's the most important thing. Any of your own content, things like Apple's iTunes podcast directory, is just a directory. It's an RSS aggregator. There's other ones out there. CastRoller is another one. It's basically a directory of where to find these podcasts.
Right.
So these podcasts have to be saved usually on your own website. And a lot of people start going, ooh, is that going to be like a ton of space? And not really, because podcasts are stored in MP3s. And because they're audio, we tend not to, at least all my podcasts, I record them most of the time in mono. I don't even need stereo. It's just not required. So that helps the file size. So typically an hour-long podcast that we do, hour to 90 minutes, 40 to 50 meg.
Yeah,
and these days, it's not much. It takes a little while to upload if you're at home, but it's not much. And I host both my podcasts on and some other ones on a commercial-grade hosting package. And we've never had a problem. And as I was saying to you pre-show, if you ever get to a point where your hosting provider is calling you and saying you're really using a lot of bandwidth, that's a nice problem to have. And you probably would have already found ways to help pay for that.
Yeah.
And there is specialty services designed for high volume podcasts and things like that. But that's certainly a much, much bigger step, and far beyond what we're probably talking about in the scope of this tonight.
So setting it up. Pretty simple. I'm a Mac user and I've thought about doing a podcast myself, but I got to get a content agenda together because strategically you've got to think about the content and the purpose of that. But so I've got the basic tools. I have the GarageBand. I have the laptop. I have a headset with a mic. In terms of hosting and figuring that piece out, we're talking a little bit pre-show about sites like WordPress having plugins to make it really easy.
Yeah,
to do this.
And again, that's what I use. Other people use different things. I use what works for me. There is one thing, it's like anything else in computing. There's no one right way.
Yeah.
So whatever it works for you, if it helps you achieve what you want, more power to you. I use a PC at home. I use a Mac when I'm on the road. They both do a good job. So with WordPress, for example, there's some very good WordPress plugins. One of the ones I use right now is called PowerPress.
Okay.
So it's a plugin from WordPress. You basically throw it in. But what I like about it is once you initially set up your initial RSS feed and stuff like that, and that, again, that's the link you'll send to iTunes, things like that. And this will guide you step by step on how to do it. And quite often it's things like, okay, what sort of podcast is it? So let's use the example of the Canadian Tech Podcast.
Right.
It's a technology podcast, so it'll go into computers and technology.
Mm-hmm.
It'll typically say, well, where is it located? Canada. You know, it's things like that to help with searches and that. They'll often ask if it's going to be rated G, if it's going to be explicit. Typically mine, I usually do like the equivalent of an AA rating, you know, because there's the odd time we will swear and I don't have the beep to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I probably just woke a few people up there, didn't I? And yeah, what's nice of once you set that up, then every week when I record a podcast, what we do is we typically have three or four guests in our case, but again, could be a single person. We will have show notes. So I'll have typically some show notes, what we're going to talk about, our topics, whatever. What I then do is when the podcast is done, so I've recorded it, I've done whatever editing needs to be done, I've saved it as an MP3 file.
Mm-hmm.
What I will do is I'll use an FTP program, or your hosting provider will have something, a way for you to copy that MP3 file up to your web hosting service, and you'll know what the location is once it's up there. What I then do is I create a post in WordPress. I simply, 9 times out of 10, I cut and paste the show notes.
Excellent.
It becomes the post. And then in the plugin, there's an area that says, okay, give me the path to the MP3 file. I put that path in, and you know, the first time's the only challenging one. After that, I just take the previous post, copy it, change the file name. And what's great about this, you click verify, it'll say, yep, I see it, it's this long, and it does a lot of the grunt work.
Yeah.
And then I publish it in WordPress.
And that's so great that the technology in those platforms have made it automated, because
it's a lot easier than it used to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Because a lot of responsibility now for social media content creators is learning how to manage these tools, and you have to do it efficiently. So it's helpful that you can integrate the technology so easily to make it effective.
Yeah. And that's one of the key things. If it becomes really complicated and cumbersome, you're likely not going to do it beyond a couple of times.
No.
It's just like when I consult with backups, I say the same thing. You've got to make it simple.
Yes. You started to talk a little bit about, you know, when you post your podcast, mm-hmm. how you would tag it. And we're actually going to be talking about tagging and folksonomies and SEO later on in the course. But that reminded me of the importance or the need, because A, you're going to create content, and you talked a little bit about, you know, defining the subject matter, creating show notes. So you have a guide, you talk about it, and you provide those notes after the show. We'll provide show notes, by the way, about some of the
platforms. We're going to provide links and all that. Definitely.
Yes. To what we're talking about. But on the other hand, if an organization wants to leverage a podcast by being a guest on mm-hmm. a podcast
yep.
and by trying to find, I mean, I've done this myself where I'm searching, I didn't know CastRoller, so thank you for mm-hmm. mentioning that, but I've searched iTunes, you know, by
yep.
category to find
yep.
popular
yep.
podcasts that then I can pitch my clients to be a part of, or I can pitch myself to be a part of.
Right.
So maybe talk a little bit about, from your experience, if you know of other really great ways to find those top podcasts or any podcasts.
Again, definitely the search engines are a good help. For recommendations from friends.
Yes.
When we talk about iTunes and we talk about CastRoller, or again, they're another aggregation service. Not everyone uses iTunes. Not everyone
yeah.
likes iTunes. CastRoller is a service done by a gentleman who lives in the area, and the programmer is a programmer, Will Spitzel out of Waterloo.
Cool.
And they basically have created this website where you can track and keep recordings of your own podcasts and play them on your computer. And again, they provide searches in that. And what happens is, as podcast creators, we can register our podcasts to these sites. And there's dozens of them out there. I'm only on a few. iTunes is the king,
yeah.
bar none. They've certainly made it easier, even if you're not a Mac user or an Apple user, to get those podcasts. You know, you can subscribe to podcasts
yep.
if you have a Windows machine. There's other services that actually will act as a podcast aggregator instead of just the iTunes. Like, I'm just grabbing my phone here, and I use one on my iPhone myself to subscribe to called Instacast.
Okay.
And Instacast is nothing more than another app that you can search for podcasts and subscribe, and it will automatically download it to your phone.
Wow.
And keep track. So it's a similar idea
yeah.
to iTunes. So, you know, and that's one thing. It's sometimes it's hard to get the word out. But, if you're in iTunes and you properly catalog, and
yeah.
usually it's like anything else, good quality. It's if other good people or good sites reference you, you're going to rise to the top of the pile. That's what I tend to do. I also tend to look for, if I'm interested in a particular topic, let's say I'm a backup and disaster recovery specialist, so I'll throw a Google search in there for things like that, see what's out there, even within the aggregators themselves. A lot of the stuff I've discovered is either been that way, or I hear about it through word of mouth on Twitter,
right.
things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point because two things on that. If you're creating content, you want to make sure that you're cataloging it and tagging it appropriately, and then using those same tags or finding out what are the industry standard tags to make sure that
well,
you're
yeah,
listed.
And exactly. And there is some stuff, and that's where some of these plugins will be helpful because they will add the SEO for you.
Oh, very cool.
Actually, within the MP3 files, you can add tags themselves.
Okay.
And generally what happens is you do that, you know, either when you're editing or just after, because you can modify an MP3 tag. For those who use iTunes, that's, you know, when you see album name, artist name,
mm-hmm.
genre, those are all tags.
Yeah.
And we can do the same thing with them within MP3 tags. And there's guides out there that'll tell you how to do it. And that can play a part as well. Usually I find, again, my own personal experience, I usually find people don't necessarily search for that way. They'll come to us via recommendation.
Yeah.
I use Twitter a lot. When we actually broadcast on Monday nights, we actually have a live stream we do as well.
Oh, very
and
cool.
And we'll just kind of blast that away on Twitter. We'll say, here's the live stream we're on now.
Yeah.
I use hashtags quite a bit to get the word out. Same thing with,
yep.
with This Week in London tweets. We use the hashtag LDNONT. Just to, you know, let people know in London we're on, we're live. And,
yep.
you know, in the studio here, we have a monitor, and that's the monitor we use. We have a chat mm-hmm. going on so people can interact with us during the broadcast.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it makes things interesting. We've got, especially on the This Week in London tweets, we've got a very diverse audience who likes to follow us live, even though we always say we produce the show for listening later.
Yes.
But we do get a lot of good live interaction with that, and it's a lot of fun. You know, we've got some very smart people, and they keep us in our places too sometimes, and have great fun winding up the hosts and the guests.
So this is a good question, because last week in class I had a student ask, we were talking about different platforms,
mm-hmm.
and they asked the difference between live streaming and podcasting.
Live streaming and podcasting. Live streaming is obviously just straight live. You're doing it to a
no
live
editing.
Studio audience.
Yep.
Podcasting is you can record it anytime. Mm-hmm. And it's designed to be listened to later, not necessarily live.
Right.
And this is what we do in both our shows. We do the live streaming as a courtesy.
Okay.
But if for whatever reason something's acting up, we can't get it to work, we go without. You know, I record for the podcast for recording. I'm not doing a live call-in show.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people though that do live streaming, then it becomes a podcast. One of my my inspiration is Leo Laporte, who does This Week in Tech, and he's got a whole network, and that's how we originally started. He started with a radio show answering questions, and then he was on a bunch of U.S. technology networks, and then he got let go from there. So we got a bunch of guys together one day, and they just got together with a bunch of mics and did a live stream, and it was so popular they started doing it every
Perfect.
Sunday night. And so what happens is that podcast now is huge.
Yeah.
And basically they offer the video stream, the audio stream. You can watch it live or you can download it later on.
Yeah.
Very cool. So that's really the big difference. You know, some people, for example, live streaming, sometimes they won't have a recording later on.
Mm-hmm.
That might happen sometimes.
You might have an exclusive chance to listen to it
exactly.
now, which could be a promotional opportunity.
Could be a promotion, but most people do. For example, the service I use for live stream is actually live stream or Ustream. And when it ends, it gives me the option to save it. So we do save those, but I don't edit them. I don't do anything. So typically, I often say it's kind of fun because we often turn on just before we start. So you can kind of hear the behind the scenes, you can hear if I flub the introduction 3 or 4 times.
Yeah,
take 2, take 3, and we leave that in. That's part of the fun. Where the actual podcast is a more polished thing. We'll take the time
Absolutely,
and make sure it's just
the
it's a little bit clean. And we shouldn't be scaring anyone when we talk about editing. No, we shouldn't. We should probably talk about different ways to record.
Okay.
So I'll briefly touch into that. In the good old days. Much before many of you were born, they used to use tape, something pretty scary.
Wow.
It wasn't on computers, it was on tape. And what typically would happen was everyone would have a mic, but it would go to a single track on a tape. So it was up to the mixer to make sure he had a good thing. We can still do that. The only difference, instead of using tape, we just use a hard drive or an SD card.
Yep.
So what I call the analog way, and again, we'll have some links on this, but typically what will happen is, for example, here in the studio tonight, I've got a mixing board, I've got your mic and my mic going into a mixing board, and then I've got one of the outputs going out to basically a small little digital audio recorder with an SD card. And the thing about this method is that when I load the file into GarageBand or Audacity later, I'll see one track. Everything's combined into one. So as long as I keep on my toes and I make sure the levels are good, you know, I don't accidentally turn my voice down like that and turn it back up, we should be good for a recording. It makes it very easy to edit. When I do the Canadian Tech Podcast, typically that's the way I'll do it. I basically will go in, I will save the file on the SD card. I'll then load it into my either Audacity or GarageBand. I'll see it as a large bar. I'll chop off the beginning if I've flubbed the introduction a couple of times, and then I'll add our introductory music, I'll add our exit music, and I'm done. And then I export it to an MP3. The other way some people prefer to do it, and again, either or, whatever works for you, particularly with more complex podcasts, if you've got a lot more guests, maybe call in people, things like that, what they'll do is they'll use a FireWire mixing board. And again, we have the same thing here in the studio where I've got the same board, again, the same two mics, but I've also got a FireWire connection going to a Mac, and it's actually recording both your mic and my mic as separate tracks.
Okay.
With the board we have, unless we wanted to spend a lot of money, any mixing I do on the board right now, if I try flipping the knobs up and down, won't make a difference to the FireWire track.
Yep.
It'll record it the same constant thing. When we're done, I can go back and I can edit individual volume controls on the computer.
Oh, that's great.
Right. So, but again, it may take a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So if we've had a case, and it's happened too, if you've noticed maybe during the podcast, you haven't realized someone's mic's a little bit hot or someone's, you can adjust that in post. It takes a little bit longer. But it's essentially the same process. You finish your edits, you add whatever effects you want, and you save it as an MP3. And then away you go.
This is a really beautiful setup. Maybe I'll try and snap a shot and include it in the podcast because it's a beautiful, there's a lot of money invested here. And that's incredible. And you can hear that quality when you listen to the podcast. I'm regularly featured on a podcast called Pod Catalyst.
Yes.
And it's about economic development.
Yep.
And I always do the podcast as a Skype to Skype phone
yep.
call. And so the host has tried to explain to me a few times, oh, just download this software and it'll record everything
yep.
that you're talking
yep.
about. I haven't tried it yet. But that's a really unique platform because I travel a lot in the work that I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had conversations with him across the world.
Well,
as long as I
yep.
have Wi-Fi, I can
you're
log
exactly.
in
the,
Skype
the,
to Skype.
The actual Castroler podcast, where the guys who are responsible, they do that. They actually do it via Skype. And what happens is one person, they each record their own Skype conversations. One person emails the other person his file.
Wow.
And he just merges, again, multi-track. You just
wow.
merge it together. It's actually pretty straightforward. And again, you get a good audio quality.
Yeah, and that's what I want to kind of remind the students is that you don't have to be an audio expert or a tech expert to do this. There's
yeah.
tools out there.
And you also don't have to pay thousands.
No.
You know, like I said, yeah, we've built the thing here. And yeah, actually, you know, probably the walls were the most expensive bit.
Explain the walls.
Okay, the walls, basically, it's a soundproof setup. They've got basically some special Sonopan, what I call drywall on the outside.
So, mm-hmm.
And then in between the metal studs, we have basically a very dense packing material. And then we've actually got, believe it or not, they're actually moving blankets
okay.
that you can rent when you're moving. And then again, the idea is it just helps deaden the sound.
Yeah.
And you know, people notice it when they first step in here.
Yeah. It's a really odd.
Yeah. It's an odd feeling but it really, it prevents the echoes because the mics we use, you know, what we call is they're very dynamic and they can be very hot.
Yeah.
But it helps with the sound quality. But we've got to be careful about outdoor sound. So like when I was recording live at Project Play a couple of weeks ago, we were in an outdoor environment, and you can hear it in the background.
Yeah.
I could edit that out if I want to, but it's part of the
it's
flavor
part of the
for
show.
That.
Yeah.
But again, if I go back to my buddy Bill and Will, they do their Project Play podcast in each of their houses in a quiet room. They record, as I said, they talk to each other during Skype, and they just record it. So you can do it almost anywhere. And as I said, the equipment doesn't have to be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just starting out, there's nothing wrong with, as I said, your standard USB gaming headset microphone. Most people tend to, as they want to get more into it, they'll actually go out and buy what's called like the traditional analog XLR microphone.
Okay.
Those are the one with the bigger plugs. And they'll buy a little small mixing board. And you can get that for under a couple of hundred.
Yeah.
The mics were actually, you and I are talking on. 2 years ago when we got the first two, they were over $300. And
wow.
I got one from in London. I'm going to give a plug out to these guys, the PA Shop. They're
mm-hmm.
out in East London. Great guys. If you ever have questions, $139 I picked up the last one for.
Yeah, so that's a good price.
Yeah, yeah. And you add what's called a pop filter, and that's the little foam thing. If you ever see a picture of a radio station, you'll often see they're talking into a mic, but there's like a little foam cover in front.
Yeah.
That's called a pop filter. It helps prevent, because if you didn't have that, you'd really hear the puh. And the you
yeah.
know, stuff like that, it helps soften the noise, and that will make a difference. And using what I call the more pro gear, you will hear a difference in the sound quality.
Yeah.
But other than that, everything else here is entirely optional. The only thing you got to watch sometimes, and it's just happening. One of our phones, we didn't put our phones in airplane mode, so
oh.
I'm hearing some background. They're sensitive enough, so I'm going to put my phone in airplane mode in case it was mine.
It's picking up the signal from our phones.
It's picking up.
Our
yeah,
listeners
sometimes
will
it
probably
can
hear that.
Yeah, they'll hear a little. I used to call it the BlackBerry sound because
oh.
it always would sound like a BlackBerry. There we go. Yeah,
that's an that's good to know the sort of the spectrum of technology available. And I think what's great about podcasting, it's part of like the maker culture, the hacker culture,
very much
where
so.
Individuals can own it. And so you do see you hear a lot of professional audio produced, overproduced. But then it's really popular and really common to hear just a couple of guys and gals in their basements talking
right.
to one another.
And the topics are all over the place. You've got people like Michael Hyatt, who's a ex-publisher down in the States, but he's a productivity management consultant.
Mm-hmm.
He does a weekly podcast called This Is Your Life. And again, he does that right from his house, single
yeah.
single pro mic, a little mixing board. It sounds great. He had someone write some of his intro music. For our tech podcast, one of my co-hosts, he wrote the intro music. And for the other one, we used one of the open license files from GarageBand, This Week in London Tweets. It's a GarageBand standard music file.
Excellent. Yeah, so there's a lot out there for you to do DIY, because I'd like the students, and especially my online students, to try podcasting, because we're going to, Stu is kind enough to put together just some links, some notes with some links. It's great if you can test it, because what's nice about this platform is there's really not a lot of rules in terms of how you structure what the expectations are.
And it can also lead to other things. We have people use the studio for voiceover work.
Yeah.
So, for example, we talk about Voices.com, a local company here in London. A lot of people use it for their voiceover work.
Yeah, the studio is good enough to do that.
Exactly. A home studio is good enough to do that. And the other thing I should mention is, you know, the Unlab here at the Research Park is open every Thursday from 7 till 10. And if people want to, you know, hear more about it, they can just flip me an email or let me know, and I'll try and be there that particular night. I'm not here every Thursday. But, you know, and again, we'll have my link. And there's a lot of people out there. People are very good about answering questions. I literally knew nothing about podcasting other than what it was about 3 years ago.
Okay.
And, you know, through a lot of, you know, through people, a lot of little bit of research and stuff like that, it's really not rocket science. It's like anything else. You just go ahead and do it.
Yep.
And, you know, I always say I don't talk to an audience. I talk to the people in the room. You know, do it like a conversation. Some people get really nervous. Like, I've been on commercial radio, and I've done that, and I approach it the same way. I'm having a conversation with people.
Yeah. And that's one thing I've said to the students many times, is that these platforms aren't rocket science. A lot of the social media platforms are meant to be accessible and user-friendly. So especially something like this sounds really complicated, and you can make it very complicated, but there are ways to make it really accessible.
As I said, the most complicated thing, if you ask most podcasters, is when they're initially, and a lot of podcasters do several different podcasts over their career or whatever. One of the most complicated things is getting that initial, what we call the RSS, the aggregation setup, because you don't do it. You only do it once per podcast. After that, you're just updating episodes. But again, Apple, for example, has some very excellent guides. And a lot of these plugins now make it very easy. Like, I've done two or three now over the years. And, you know, even during the third one, I still went back and I kind of went through the Apple guide and went, okay, this is how you have to do it. Make sure it's... Yeah, you just follow the guy. You don't have to memorize it.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
And you can do it once, and then you can maybe
usually
ask
it's
an
pretty
expert.
Good. Yeah, it's usually pretty good.
And they can call you.
Exactly. And there's a ton of people out there that will be glad to answer questions. What's one thing that's great about the podcasting community that I've dealt with in this area and beyond, everyone's very good. Like, we've got some amazing podcasts. We've got Matthew Hoy and his team, who does the Games Day podcast.
Yep.
They talk about console gaming and that. And again, these guys are fabulous. They do a couple of shows a week, and they really divide the effort. They've got one guy that does editing, you know, and that's awesome too. Down to, I talk about Bill and Will, you know, they do their own little thing, but I know I can ask them questions and vice versa. We've had little one-offs or small series podcasts by people in the Twitter community in London have done different things. And it's just that easy. Even, you know, it could be something just as simple as if you're hosting a fundraiser and you want to just be there for that. You know, if you recall a couple of years ago at some of the Canada 3.0 events in Stratford, and that you were involved with that, and they were kind of one-offs.
Yeah.
You know, you'd had guests come in and you'd talk and you'd,
strategically, I've used podcasts. Well, I've actually used live streaming a lot more than podcasting, where we've gone to events and we've set up broadcasts so we could talk about what we're doing. And I use it to, position myself or my clients on other people's shows.
Yeah.
So I send pitch documents. So
right.
Can I be a guest? Here's what I'd like to talk about.
Yep.
And I think that's where, you know, figuring out how to research different podcasts. And as you suggested, word of mouth is so helpful in that area.
It is indeed. It is.
Just asking your colleagues, asking the people who you want to reach, who they're actually listening to.
And I think you're finding podcasting now, it's not just the technology, the game, or the traditional formats. You're seeing a lot more news, you know, areas that, you know, you get into. We talk about professional development. There's a lot of things like that now. you know, you could literally listen 24/7
yeah.
To all the different podcasts.
Yes.
You know, and that's, and again, that's when, you know, it comes to quality. And like, I don't have time all the time to listen to them all. And that's what's nice if a podcast has show notes, because I'll go in for certain ones that are long.
Yeah.
Oh, this looks really okay. I'll skip to that and go ahead and do that. You know, as I've just knocked down the digital recorder, but see, that's another nice thing about not recording to tape, and doesn't damage anything.
Yes, exactly. So we're fine. Well, you're going to post the show notes. I want to really encourage the students to read through those and take the links and to seriously consider, my online class has to, they have a blog and they have to respond to my blog post with a blog post. So I'm going to challenge them to respond to this blog and this podcast with a podcast.
A little recording of their own. Perfect.
Yeah. Record themselves. And maybe I'd like to hear their thoughts about, if, you know, their interaction with podcasts, what I think of the tool, what I think of integrating. And it was great to hear your perspective and the way you talked a lot about integration with other tools, like with WordPress and Twitter, because that's one thing we've talked about is it's nothing really stands alone in this.
Exactly. Podcasts can't stand alone. I could throw this out, but I'm not going to get nearly the traffic. Again, I'm a big Twitter guy.
Yeah.
I always have been, and that's not the only thing. If I was doing more of a business-related podcast, I'd probably throw it out on LinkedIn a little bit more.
Yeah.
It really depends what you're doing.
Exactly, and where your audience is.
Exactly.
So I really want to encourage the students to do that and to think about how they could. I mean, I'm not sure, some of them are working for organizations and in this role right now.
Right.
Some of them are undergrads. So, but think about how you can introduce podcasting to your marketing mix.
Right.
If you're already using social media tools, if you can create a podcast for your organization, is there a strategy or a plan or a content agenda you can set? Or is there an opportunity to do some research on who you could pitch your organization to?
And I think one of the important things to keep in mind is it's just like blogging. At times, you know, you might just want to start off with, maybe you're just going to do a summary, let's say, of the annual meeting.
Yeah.
Or the AGM or something like that. There's nothing that says you have to do it. Thou must do it every week.
That's a great point.
But also keep in mind, depending how you market it, just like a blog post, there's nothing worse than someone actively promoting a podcast and it's only updated once a month.
Yeah.
Or if you're not, like, for example, the This Week in London Tweet Show right now, my co-host, he's the executive director of an organization, nonprofit here, and he's very busy right now.
Yeah.
So we don't get time to do it every Wednesday night, but we've also publicized that.
Yeah.
Where the technology one, we tend to do every week. It's pretty rare we don't. There's the odd time we won't, but we let people know. So if you're going to make it a focus of your strategy, don't put it front and center on your website if it's only going to be updated once every three or 4 months. It's like a blog. Have a static page and then have that as a link somewhere.
That's a good point about audience expectations, because if you build,
big,
they need to know, right? And,
yep,
and it's a good point to say, it's okay if you don't want to do this regularly. If you want to just use it as a tool when it's necessary, like, that's why with my organization, I've used it when it made sense.
Yeah.
And then I didn't. It's just
and amazing. I know some blogs, particularly some technology ones, instead of a traditional written blog post, they'll either use an audio podcast or sometimes a video podcast.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Whatever's
same
relevant.
Same idea as the post, particularly to explain something or show, oh, this is where I was at this neat gaming convention. And they'll do it that way. So that's another example.
Yeah, that's great advice. So we're going to wrap up. We've talked a lot. I've given you a lot of information to think about from the technology side, the setting up, some of the specifics about that, about cataloging, about finding directories, about using plugins and integrating with other social media. And then I've challenged you a bit to think about content creation and actually creating content yourself. So ideally, I will be listening to some podcasts from you integrated with your blogs.
Awesome.
Yes. So thank you, Stu, at Stuart Clark, StuartClark.
Yep.
Is and the Twitter handle.
And again, we'll have all the links in that in our show notes.
Yes.
And I'll put a ton of links in there. And if you have any questions, I'm hoping to actually attend the following class.
Yes. I've invited Stuart, so hopefully you can meet him in person. We can have a more fulsome conversation.
Exactly.
In person, maybe take a look at some of the technology.
Yep. And I'll be glad to answer questions.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And good luck, class, with your podcast.